everyone, and welcome to another episode of the ECCDC podcast. I'm your host, Jeanette Wilson, and I'm excited to be joined by three amazing guests, Jacqueline, Joelle, and Tiffany, who are the co-owners and operators of Greenbelt Academy, an early learning centre in Niagara. They are passionate about nature-based outdoor play and come with a wealth of knowledge and experience, which they'll be sharing with us over the next half an hour. Jackie is an Ontario certified teacher, and both Joelle and Tiffany are registered early childhood educators, and they are all forest school practitioners. So join me as Jackie, Joelle and Tiffany share their personal journeys to embracing nature-based outdoor play and the philosophies that inspire them. They'll also share what outdoor nature-based programming looks like in their program, their go-to resources, along with some tips and strategies to intentionally plan for nature-based outdoor play. They'll also be sharing what inspires them and sparks their curiosity in the great outdoors. So welcome, Jacqueline, Tiffany and Joelle. I'm so excited to be having conversation with you all about outdoor play in early learning and childcare settings. I have to say, outdoor play is something which is really dear to my heart, because as an ECE, that is where I love to be with the children outdoors. So let's get started and with our first question. So nature play and outdoor play has become much more prevalent within early learning and childcare recently, with many ECEs embracing the great outdoors. So could you just share a little bit about your personal journeys to embracing outdoor play? And were there any philosophies that inspired you, that you take inspiration from?
Yeah, I can start. My name's Joelle. I'm an EC as well. I started with my home as a home daycare with my own children when they were young, and started just realizing with the children in my center how important and well balanced and how much I enjoyed, you know, interacting with the children when we were outdoors mostly. So that sort of took me on a deep dive into different programs available in the area that had the same sort of philosophy, you know, focusing more on nature and the outdoors. And there wasn't really a lot there in this area. So that's where my journey started. And I met these two ladies, and they were both like-minded as well. And, you know, we all collaborated together and started this business from all different backgrounds. So I'll let Jackie introduce herself as well.
Yeah. I'm Jackie. And when I was going to teacher's college in the summer, I worked at a conservation area that did some children's programming. And when I graduated, I realized that I loved the idea of combining nature and education. So that was kind of the path that I wanted to go down. And yeah, I started kind of looking at different programs in the area. And, you know, like Joelle said, we kind of found each other and we started offering nature programming. Yeah, we kind of just took off from there. And I just really liked the idea of offering education in nature and doing something different.
Hi, I'm Tiffany, and I'm an ECE, and I started my journey towards forest education after I graduated, and I began to work for the school board, and at the same time, I started to have my own children, and when I started working with children, I noticed that there was a need for forest education to be brought into these environments, and there wasn't anything really available, and also the emphasis that was being put on outdoor education and just being outdoors in general was, I guess I felt that we could be doing a better job, and it was something that was really, really important to childhood. So I began to do my own research, and I took a course through the ECCDC to start, and It was about getting children into nature, and I was really inspired by that. And at that conference, I did meet a lady that was also interested in the same thing and introduced me to Jackie and Joelle. And we just started on weekends taking kids to the forest and providing programs that way and summer camps and that kind of thing until we decided to make it a full-time occupation here. So we quit our jobs and we opened this business, and it was quite a risk, but at the same time, it's been completely rewarding in that we now have this ability to provide an environment that allows children to have access to nature on a regular basis. It was really our goal. So yeah, it was just passion, I guess, passion, and then just, really seeing the need for this in our community was really the driving force to get us to this point.
Yeah, wonderful. So thinking about filling those gaps, and I know nature based outdoor play is becoming really, really popular. That momentum's been going. So the children in your community having that chance to experience the great outdoors. So thinking about pedagogy, that's become a word that's in our vocabulary within early learning and childcare. And there are lots of different pedagogies that we speak to in our profession. But something that people speak to is nature-based pedagogy, outdoor play pedagogy. What does outdoor play, nature-based pedagogy mean to you?
I can start first if you'd like. We want it to also with our passion also get more information about it too, not just, we never do anything just out of our opinion or anything. So we all went back to school and got our forest school practitioner certification. So I would say that our pedagogy we would originally took from, and we've adapted it from there, but we took from Forest School Canada's head, hand, and heart approach. So I'd say that that was sort of the basis of when we started. I don't know if anybody else wants to add to that.
If we're talking about our current pedagogy, we feel like when Joelle's talking about how it's evolved, it's because we have found that as a full-time forest school, it was different when we were offering part-time programming. And still are we still have programs that are like Forest Friday, so children come and visit us once a week in summer camp, and our Forest Saturday program, which is aimed at a little bit older children. We find that that is completely forest school. We use the head, hands, and heart approach, and that kind of pedagogy. But as we developed full-time programs and it became like full-time preschool, and then we also have a kinder program that the community wanted. Ontario curriculum basically to be included in it. So we've created our own Greenbelt pedagogy, which we worked with a doctor to create a development checklist. And so we call ourselves a balanced approach to learning. And that was done because we felt that it was what our community needed and what our community wanted, so that we were able to create, we have this, a really great program that combines is for school and nature-based, and we do everything as much as possible nature-based, but it also adds in the reality of the world in which we live, which is that these children are going to go off to public school at some point. And then with our program, it would be grade one. It might be a private school, but a lot of them go to public school. So that we're preparing them with those skills, and that they're at the level of curriculum that they need to be at, but at still the same time, getting all the benefits that you would from a forest school. So it's a really great balance, and we find that it really, really works for our full-time programs. And then with our part-time programs, as I said, we do complete nature immersion, and environmental literacy is mostly what we offer. And it's yeah, based in a lot of the way of being in the program for the educators and how they interact with the children. A lot of that comes from the head, hands, and heart approach, which is from Forest School Canada.
So you've mentioned that a couple of times. So for our listeners, could you just explain what that approach is?
So there's
a few different categories, areas in this approach. One of the big ones is extended time in nature. So bringing the children outside, and our goal is at least 3 hours a day. So the longer they're outside, the longer they're able to explore and really figure out and explore their interests. And another big area that we focus on is place-based learning. So visiting the same area throughout the seasons, and we really get to explore what the changes are, what animals live there, what
Real life happenings.
Real life happenings, what is going on in their community. So they get to experience it in all different seasons, and they really get to have that sense of self as well. Like, this is my community. This is where we're going to visit, we're going to share. So those are two of the really big approaches in the head, hand, and heart approach.
Risky play.
Risky play,
Risky
yeah.
play.
And then our educators are play the role of facilitator rather than expert, so they're co-learning with the students. And then the role of the child is it's child-led, so interest-based. It's less structured.
Lovely. Great. So thank you for explaining the head, hand, head, heart approach to us.
So I remember it because it's head, heart, hand, right?
Oh,
So it sort of starts from there because I,
yeah.
Wonderful. So for those of you, because this is going to be the audio, Joelle's
Right.
just shared with us. So she's touched her head, her heart, and then offered her hands out in front of her. So that's an absolutely wonderful image. Thank you for sharing that one. It's certainly one that I'm going to be remembering now. So just building on that a little bit, could you just share with us what outdoor play and looks like, nature-based play, outdoor play looks like within your program?
Do you want me to start? Okay, I can
Yeah,
start.
sorry.
So we see our outdoor environments as classrooms, and then we plan accordingly. So instead of just in a regular center, sometimes the focus isn't on the outdoors. The focus for outdoors might be for gross motor, but not so much plant. So we have zones in our backyards, just like you would in an indoor classroom. So quiet thinking zone. Loose parts, materials for building, all of the different zones that you would have, sort of
Art
in,
center,
art
mud
center,
kitchen,
right?
house, dress up, dramatic play, like all of that. So think of an indoor classroom reflected outside, which we see as our most important classroom.
Yeah, so our outdoor classroom is seen as the primary focus, with the exception of the winter months, which of course can be challenging, especially with our toddler program, because they're some of the
Bundled up.
materials are harder for them to manipulate and everything, because they have to have gloves on, and that comes with its own challenges and the bulky clothing. We do try to keep the or bring the outdoors inside in the winter. So making sure that nature is the focus, and still working to achieve the 3 hour minimum while outdoors.
In our program, we also have our on-site location. So when Joel's talking about the classrooms, that's our on-site environment, which is completely naturalized. So we have their large spaces with, the beautiful big trees and all of that kind of stuff. But we do take the children off-site. There's a little forest by us, and it's a beautiful park with creeks and different areas of the forest and all of that. And we have the opportunity to bring them there 2 to 3 times a week. So that's when we engage in our environmental literacy or nature immersion opportunities. So all of our children do have that opportunity to at least twice a week visit for the afternoon, like 2 afternoons a week, to go and immerse themselves directly in nature, which is really great because then those experiences are also brought back to the classroom, right? The things that they saw, and then there's the opportunity for them to recreate them or build on them, or and for the teachers to scaffold that learning that happened, answer those questions and things like that. So it's a really beautiful connection that we have the ability to create in our program.
Yeah, so thinking about that, everything that you can do indoors, you can do outdoors and more. And you mentioned that concept of going beyond the fence, so the playground.
And when you use nature, we find that when we're providing opportunities for education, when we do it with nature, it's like more organic. Like the learning happens more organically because it's things that they understand. It's things that the question, a lot of questions just happen, right? Because they're seeing it. There's like with place-based learning, they're seeing the seasons change. They're observing the life cycle of animals and plants and things like that. It doesn't have to be taught on worksheets, and we're watching it firsthand. So it becomes a more authentic style of learning.
Right. And I love that concept of it not being indoors or outdoors. It's that transition out to in and then bringing that out, those outdoor pieces back into our indoor programs. So just following on from that a little bit, how would you say that your approach differs from maybe more traditional outdoor play?
So one of the ways it differs is that we offer a lot of loose part play materials that promote open-ended play. And being outdoors, we try to make that all nature-based. So whether that's, when they go to the forest, they're collecting sticks that they can add to their loose parts, whether it's collecting stones, things like that. We have, just lots of loose parts, and we try to make them all as natural as possible.
And then trying to avoid plastic materials as much as possible in our environment. So that's been just what building on what Jackie said about the natural materials. So sometimes that comes with its challenges in the winter months, and just learning how to, like, there's an outdoor Mod Podge that we use to preserve some of the materials outside, or there's we do we try our best to provide materials that they're able to use in all seasons.
And I think it's the one of the main things for us would be that we see, I mean, I know we already mentioned this, but that our outdoor spaces are considered classrooms. So that we put an importance on them. Our educators plan for them in an equal amount of planning indoors. And even as we go into our summer months, they don't even plan indoors, their indoor environment anymore, because they're barely ever in it. We're required to come in for, because we're licensed for our preschools, so they're required to come in for nap time and those kind of things, but then they're right back outside. So I think that our outdoor spaces would be seen as different because they're so enriched. They're not just the same materials every day that are offered. They're constantly being changed, and as the children's interests emerge, then things are being added, and every month they redo them and set new focuses and things like that. So I think for me, one of the main things I would see different is the importance that we put on our outdoor playground.
Yeah, that just reminds me, as you were speaking about it being an outdoor classroom, I think it was Margaret Macmillan that coined that phrase of the outdoors being a classroom without a roof. So yeah, very much into that kind of concept. So you've spoken to your materials. Is there anything that you would say that is particularly unique about the materials that you use in your outdoor spaces?
We're seeing them more now, like as you were saying, it's the popularity of outdoor play, or the importance of it, and bringing nature into the programming has definitely increased. So, as you walk by childcare centers these days, you do see stumps out there and like tires and things like that. So that used to be something that was definitely unique to what we do. Now I would say outside that I haven't really seen another center have is our obstacle courses.
I was gonna say that.
Yeah, we have very in each of our program provide obstacle courses for our children. So we provide materials like wood planks, tires, spools, anything that they can create obstacle courses with. Tubes. Oh, we've got these big like PVC, huge PVC tubes donated so that they can crawl through them, and we create these challenging play structures, I guess, that are movable so the children can be creative with it. They can be created to be more challenging or less challenging, depending on the child's ability. And it does really bring in that element of risky play. And then with the children, then having those conversations about negotiating where, how this should be set up. Is this, what can we do to make sure that it's as safe as necessary? Not safe as possible necessarily, but safe as necessary. And, and you start having those conversations, they start challenging what they can do physically. And we don't see a lot of that in other centers. We see static structures, right? And so the benefit of not having static structures is that your brain, every single movement that you make, you're creating new synapses, you're challenging yourself, right? Whereas when you're in a static structure, it's just like you already know this and you just keep doing it over and over again. It's still outside, it's still great, but we just feel that having this ability to change the challenges and for the children to be a part of that and and working together, it also creates social emotional well-being in the way that the children have to negotiate and communicate and work together to create these obstacle courses. It's just it's really great to watch and to have the ability to have that in our programs.
So some wonderful experiences that the children are having when they're at your with you at your program, and that whole kind of piece around the risk, children taking risk is a challenge to them, and that learning that takes place when that risk and challenge happens. So thinking about educators who maybe want to spend more time outside and want to intentionally plan for outdoor play, are there any tips or strategies that you could share with them?
If they have a passion for doing this sort of programming at their center or at their school, I think talking to their administrator is really important, because if you don't have your manager or your principal or whatever it is on your side, then you might have a lot of challenges. But if you find somebody that is, excited about it and wanting to, excited about this opportunity for the children, then you'll have a lot less they'll have a lot less challenges.
And I think part of it is just thinking of your outdoor space in a similar way as your indoor space. So if you think of it in terms of zones, then it's much easier to plan for what you might want to bring outdoors, what activities you want to do with the students.
I also think, yeah, building on what Joelle was saying about talking with administration, talking with your other educators, because I'm assuming that when we're talking about that they probably are already in a center, or if you're talking about educators that are looking to add this, that they're probably not on their own if they're in a center or at a school board, and really talking about what the challenges are. So why isn't this everywhere? Like, why isn't this the norm for every single center and every single school board, right? And a lot of that has to be in probably the work it takes, children getting messy and dirty and having to change them and that kind of stuff. The cleanup after, the legalities of risky play and things like that. Like, that's probably where they're going to find a lot of challenges. So doing your research and really knowing why you feel passionate about this, what is the benefit to children engaging in this type of play, and and why it really should be embraced. And it might take some convincing, and it might take some advocation. And but if that's something that you're really passionate about, then I've seen some teachers that do amazing things in the school board and really work with the community and work with the other teachers that they have and really create some amazing spaces that aren't common or required by these school boards or places of work. So yeah, I think that educating yourself and deciding why you're passionate and knowing all of the benefits and really advocating for it and getting parents on board. And because parents do need to be on board, because it does take extra clothing. Like, it is about packing for your child. And there are, disadvantages and to the work that an EC needs to participate in and things like that, but it's so worth it. And it's really great to see it happening. Like when we're, you know, sometimes we just watch the environment and these children, these spaces that have been created, or if we happen to go to the forest with them and you see them engaging, and it's like that little like, oh, moment, you know, where you're just like, and this is it. And this is what, like, you can feel so proud about what you're offering and how you're supporting these children.
Wonderful, thank you. Yes, that why so important, and you spoke to that passion too. And when you're all speaking today, I can really hear and feel that passion coming through. Yeah, and those conversations that we may have to have those conversations multiple times. But thinking about, you also spoke to the advocacy as well. How do we get everybody on board, taking out time to get that in place? So I'm curious, do you have go-to resources that you use to spark children's curiosity during that outdoor time in nature?
So, with the forest, they can bring tools with them, like when they're off site, you know, magnifying glasses, shovels, tarps for building forts, just like having a tools and resource kit.
Like an exploration kit.
Binoculars, little books like identification
Yeah.
books and things like that, especially if you know that there's going to be, like, let's say you're taking them to a park and you know there's going to be salamanders or frogs or whatnot, then providing opportunities to, you know, identify them or follow tracks or things like that. Compasses, all of that kind, depending on your age group.
Keeping recycled materials so that they can build little habitats for like worms or whatever it is that they want to observe while they're in play.
So I love that concept of that exploration kit, those go-to resources that you have ready to go, I guess, for want of a better explanation. So you spoke to this a little bit earlier, but I just wanted to explore it a little bit more around how you see the role of educators during children's outdoor nature play experiences.
Our educators are seen as facilitators of the environment. So their on-site role is a little bit different than when they're off-site exploring in the forest with the students. So on-site, we offer a mixture of teacher-directed opportunities as well as child-led opportunities. And off-site is a lot more focused on the free exploration, where children are offered an inspiration, or focus for that session. And then everything is kind of guided in the forest by the child's interest after that.
So really reflecting the con those concepts from how does learning happen when we, I like to call them the three C's, but that capable, curious, competent. So I'm also curious, so we spoke to sparking children's curiosity. So I'm curious to what inspires you and sparks your curiosity when you're outdoors, with the children in nature.
Nature in general, it's amazing, actually. You don't, I, you know, I've always, I feel like I've always been an advocate for nature, an environmentalist, you know, a little bit, and always felt like I had a connection. But I have to tell you, like, we don't know, even if you feel like you have, well, for me anyway, I feel like I have a knowledge of nature. I learn something new every time I go, I guess that's what I'm trying to say. Like, every time you go, you find a new, you know, a new flower or a new kind of insect or a bird that you can't identify or a call that you haven't, that you can't identify if you hear it. And it's just constant. Like, it would be hard to be a complete expert all the time, even if we wanted to be. We say that we, you know, we want to co-learn with the students, and it's very easy to do that because it's always like the things they find and the questions that come up, and it's just like, wow, that's awesome. Let's look
Let's
into
learn.
let's look into it, because we don't have the answers. So, I find that I'm constantly being inspired, and it just makes me want to learn more and dig deeper, and then also have more respect for the world around us, right? And the environment that you see things, and then you're like, oh, I wonder why that happened. Oh, I didn't realize that, this was connected to this and this happened. So, and then how our human impact, what we have, that impact that we have on nature. And I don't know, I just think that I would be very surprised that people will go into a session, into a forest session, and not come back inspired by some part of it, right? And yeah.
Even just the little unknowns, like you're kind of saying, like we don't know everything. So when a child asks a question and you don't know, it's so fun to just explore it with them and figuring it out and having that joy sharing that with them is really great.
It makes your it may I feel like it makes our I love that part of our job, because just trying to impart information on children constantly, I think can be exhausting. So this is an opportunity for you to learn, which is great, and then also and fuel your passion, but then also see that learning happening in children, right? And that passion being developed, right? We are contributing to helping impart a lifelong love of learning and love of nature and connection to nature within these children. And that's inspiring.
And I know a lot of the research tells us that those attitudes towards nature are developed during those early years and through childhood. And also, again, you spoke to that co-learning approach that how does learning happens speaks to. So thank you all very much for sharing your wisdom with me this afternoon. So just as we wrap up our time together, I'm curious if you have any advice that you would share with educators who are rethinking their approach to outdoor play, nature play, and the materials and experiences that they would like to afford the children that they work with. What advice would you share with them?
If you're passionate about working in this sort of environment, finding a center that already offers these kind of programming as well, like we're always looking for nature-loving, enthusiastic, curious educators. So, that would be something, finding a center. And if you can't, I think we spoke on it before, really doing your own research about the benefits that this type of programming allows for the children, and then having and speaking passionately about it with your administrators and just getting everybody on board.
Advocating for it, yeah.
I'm hearing passion and advocating coming through the whole of our conversations this afternoon. So thank you so much for your time. That's absolutely wonderful. So that wraps up this episode of the ECCDC podcast. I'd like to thank you for tuning in to this episode, and Jackie, Joelle, and Tiffany for offering an insight into their nature-based outdoor play journey. What inspires them and sparks their curiosity. Hopefully, you have gained some inspiration from them, as well as some tips and strategies that you can utilize in your outdoor play practice. If you enjoyed this podcast, then subscribe below. And if you would like us to explore any other topics, then be sure to let us know in the comments below. So join us next time when we'll be engaging in conversations with school-age educators.